welcome to another episode of the Pure Property Podcast, where we talk about all things property and property investment. Today, I'm going to let Matt take the reins of the show because you've got some questions, I understand, you're going to be asking me. Is that correct?
Yeah, we thought just to give you guys a bit of an insight on today's episode that we'd do. Yeah, a bit of a, I guess I know we did a little bit on myself in terms of the other day, in terms of my first property or one of my property's investments with the off-plan side of things. I thought it'd be good for the listeners to kind of get to know yourself a bit better. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess I'll kind of get straight into it then.
Well, just to reiterate, I actually don't know what these questions are going to be. So
yeah, we haven't stitched you up too bad, to be fair.
Good, that's fine. Well, yeah, look, let's get straight into it then. I'm ready.
All right, Toby. So just as a whole, first one, if we go off the top, how did you get started in the property world?
Very good question. So I started just over 10 years ago and I basically needed a bit of extra money because one of the businesses, which I've still got today, wasn't enough to support me because my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, had fallen pregnant. So we needed a bit more money because we had an extra mouth to feed. And she was actually working in an estate agency at the time. And she said, well, look, why don't you come in and take over my job? I think you'd be good at estate agency and sales. Selling property. So, yeah, I spoke to the business owner. She spoke to the business owner and he said, yeah. He was a bit hesitant at first because I didn't have any property background. And I would have to work alongside her until she'd left for maternity and for the baby to come, and he was a bit reserved. So I actually offered to work for free for a week. So I did work for free after a few days.
Sounds like one of the classic entrepreneur stories, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
I worked for free.
Yeah, no, I did.
Fair play.
I backed myself. I had confidence. So I did. And I think after a few days, or it may have been the week, I can't remember exactly, he said, yeah, look, really like you, be good. And then, yeah, I started off as an estate agent. So just doing your usual things, a negotiator, mainly doing viewings.
And just to give everyone an insight, what kind of, how long ago was this? Because I guess it would give us an indication as well how long you've been in the industry.
So it's just over 10 years now.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice. So quite a while. It feels like yesterday.
Yeah, I can imagine. And then in regards, coming back to the present day, couldn't you now tell us about a little bit about the role and yourself and what you do now within the property field?
Yeah, so predominantly in property, Track Capital is what I'm doing. So Track Capital, for the listeners that don't know, we're a property investment company. We help investors to purchase buy-to-let investments in off-plan and new build, mainly city centre locations, Manchester, Birmingham. So that's my main day-to-day aspect of property because we've got 10 sales team members, we've got admin and marketing team, operations, etc. So there's a lot going on there. So that's my sort of day-to-day running that alongside my business partner, Nick, who's based out in Dubai, because we do UK and Dubai property also. And we've now got offices, as some of the listeners may know, in London, Hong Kong and Dubai. So that takes up a lot of my time. But I also property invest myself. So I buy properties to rent out myself. So I've got that aspect of property. I help a very small number of clients to source very specific investments. And I'm also in the process of property developing as well. So doing developments myself. So these will be residential schemes of houses. So I'm in talks at the moment. And yeah, I'll be starting the actual property developer full scale side of things very soon. But that's what I do.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think in terms of that, it's shown how you've come from one end and growing, and it's exciting to hear that you're also dipping into the development side of things now as well. And just out of interest, how are you finding it so far? I know it's not as easy as everyone probably makes it out to be.
No, it's not. It's busy. It's you have to navigate it correctly. It's the property market, especially, I mean, when I'm dealing with my own money, so like the property development side at the moment, when I'm putting those deals together, buying the land, looking to develop, obviously that's on me. So yes, it's risky and yes, there's pressure, but that's on me. Like if it goes wrong, I've only got myself to be like, oh, okay. But when you're dealing with other people's investments, that can be quite stressful and tricky. And yeah, that's why we're very, very diligent in how we do things, because yeah, you're dealing with other people's money. So we want to be as good as possible when doing so. But yeah, it's good. I enjoy the property market in general. So business, I love business. So I'm involved in other business as well outside of property. So not only am I busy in property, I am busy outside of property as well.
Busy man, eh?
Exactly. But in property, I do enjoy it. I love the property market. I love the whole from negotiating deals up to seeing the end results. And yeah, just property in general, it's very interesting. And of course, lucrative for people as well. People can make some very good money, have good financial outcomes from property and get good assets and build good wealth. So it's good.
Definitely. No, it's exciting. And taking you all the way back to now, something that would have been obviously something, I guess, that you've done more on the start of your journey, but can you share with us a story about your first actual property deal? I'm guessing in terms of looking at it from a point of view, your first investment.
Mm-hmm.
Put it into simple terms.
Yeah. So it was 2014 that I found the deal. So it was while I was at the estate agency. Okay. So a property had come available, which I'd earmarked as quite a good property, and the owner of the business director at the time, he would take on the properties and he'd kind of shown we got this, and I had a bit of interest. And yeah, me and my brother at that point had wanted to invest in a property. So I said to him, I said, look, we've got the cash there. I think this is an opportunity we could go for. It was when the market was, so 2014 where I bought, which was in West Sussex near Gatwick, a town called Crawley. The market was just taking off, but you could still negotiate. So we managed to negotiate and paid 185 for it. Mm-hmm. It was a three bedroom maisonette, so quite rare. It'd been extended, had a loft extension. It was share freehold. And had like a detached private garden as well. But yeah, the actual completion date went through in 2015. And we, yeah, still own that today. I've actually been able to remortgage that property, I think twice now. And I've pulled out all of the money that we originally put in. So yeah, it's technically a free
really
property,
good to
I
hear.
Suppose.
It's good to hear that you've still got it as well. It obviously has worked out quite well in the long run.
It's been very good, yeah.
Good to hear. Going back over to the next one, I guess a bit more of an overall look, but how have you seen, obviously, you've been, as you said, you've been in the industry for many years now, and in that period of time, how have you seen the property market change over those years? I guess you've been through quite a lot. We've had COVID, Brexit, quite a few other things going on.
Yeah.
How would you say, in a summary, you've kind of seen the market change over the years?
Yeah, so COVID, Brexit, tax changes, sort of more people going down the limited company route. In terms of changes, I've when I first entered in my area, it was quiet, hard, difficult. You had to really negotiate, work hard for the vendors. Buyers would just sit on their hands. They weren't really buying much. It was when we were coming sort of before the real, I suppose, boom phase of that period. Yeah. So I had to work in a very difficult market. So negotiating skills came very handy at that stage. And then I saw it progress. I actually moved from that branch. They had another branch in Caterham, which is like their main branch. Very, very busy. Top player in the town. Very, very good. And I moved there. And then the market, again, was a little bit tougher negotiating, but it started to really take off. That's when we started to have like multiple viewings. Some properties have multiple offers and started to see traction in the market. Then Brexit hit. And you had people have hesitancy in the market, and we had a slight dip, and then it kind of went on as normal. And then we had a real boom phase, and then we've had COVID, so there was a slight lull, and then it kicked off back again. And now we're in the transitional period where mortgage rates are back up. So I have seen it at, obviously I wasn't here in previous recessions, so I can't sit there and say that I've been through the thick of it through loads of recessions, but I've experienced various points of the market. So stagnation, ups, slight downs, real transitional periods, real periods of difficulty, i.e. COVID, interest rates now, Brexit. So I have seen quite a lot in the market. It has given me a very good broad understanding of how people operate in certain markets, how different people will have buying behaviors in slightly different markets I've seen. So yeah, that's given me some real insight. And look, like in most things, especially in property, I am still learning new stuff. I'm quite well experienced.
As everyone, right?
Yeah.
No one can, as you said, I think you always say it always in terms of,
yeah,
no one can really read exactly what's going to happen. Of course, you can look at ways that things are going and you can kind of see how it will play out. But I guess no one can really pin it down and be like, this is exactly going to happen.
Yeah. And I've looked just beyond just the outset as well, so, of the market. So I've looked at the market fundamentals, understanding more about the economy and how economics affects the property market. There's a lot to it than just bricks and mortar.
Yeah.
So understanding that, and I learned that on quite early on, actually. I learned how the economy, economics, buying behaviors, different areas react. There's lots of different markets, little pockets of markets as well.
Hence,
investing in other locations rather than sticking to where I was. So I've managed to learn a lot over that time. And yeah, I am still continuing to learn. I'm always trying to soak stuff up like a sponge.
Well, in terms of that as well, I was going to say, you've probably been hearing over the past few years about potential crashes, Brexit being number one, I guess, at the start.
Yeah.
You then had the COVID, which apparently, obviously, we thought was going to have another crash.
Yeah.
So I can imagine you've you've been hearing that quite a few years in a row now.
Yeah, I mean, my whole take on that all, by the way, is like, even if there was to be a crash, I always say I'm investing for the long term.
Mm.
I can't predict what's going to happen tomorrow. I just know what's in front of me today. Yes, I have to plan accordingly, and I want to make sure that I'm prepared for worst case scenarios. But my buying behavior doesn't really change as in I drop off. I'll still be buying in whatever market. I just buy accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, I think when I've spoke to them and maybe tried to give them some advice when they've raised concerns or hesitation in buying, I've taken that maybe the wrong way. Maybe that I'm just ill-educated. But yeah, I have seen people that have sat there and said, I'm not buying right now. The market's going to crash. And lo and behold, the market never crashed. The best, I always use the example.
I was going to literally it
sticks in my head because I remember the phone conversation. I was in the catering branch and he was a buyer. He was an investor. And I remember him saying, I'd spoke to him about a few properties and he said, I'm not going to buy now. Brexit, it's when the referendum had been announced and I don't think they hadn't had the referendum yet. But he's like, look, this is putting all stuff to the pot. So it's all going downhill. I'm not going to buy. I'm going to wait to see what happens. And he said, I'm going to wait because I think the market's going to crash and I'm going to buy then. And I kind of said to him, well, look, we don't think there's going to be a crash. Maybe you should still continue to buy. From my understanding, he didn't buy. At the end of that period, so when the referendum had finished and then we came out of Brexit, the property prices in our area had jumped up I think the average is about 16%. I think there was around 15 to 16%. And I was like, that guy missed out on all of that.
I've seen firsthand as well when you've done it beforehand within Aura. I remember you had a conversation with one of the clients or the one you were dealing with at the time. And I think you were like, look, let's catch up in 6 months' time. And I think he was like, look, I'll come back to you because in 6 months' time, I honestly think everything's going to go and the crash is going to happen. You were like, well, let's catch up in 6 months' time and see where it's at.
And we did catch up and the market hadn't changed. It hadn't crashed like he'd thought. And he'd missed out on opportunities there as well. The same thing happened in COVID. I'll just finish on this part of the question. When COVID was announced, I actually did, and the presentation is still out there. I did a video presentation. It was maybe about a month after COVID. I can't remember exactly. It was April. I'm pretty sure I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just looking at the fundamentals. I was looking at the quantitative easing. So QE, if people don't know what that is, that's where the government was basically printing money and putting it into the economy.
Yeah.
And I was looking at all these factors and I was listening to some economists as well. And yeah, I predicted, look, it's not going to crash. The property market's going to be okay. And lo and behold, it was. And some people did listen to me at the time and luckily they did. They've done very well from it.
Yeah, no, good to hear. In regards to the next one, so when selecting or looking for a property investment for yourself,
mm-hmm.
what do you kind of look for or kind of how do you make a decision in terms of for what to, I guess, press that button and go, look, I'm going for this?
for me to actually make a decision like, yes, I'm going for this, is I will know my strategy, mm-hmm. what I'm looking for beforehand. Pretty much, if that property fits my strategy mm-hmm. and it ticks, I would say 90% of the boxes, then I just go for it. And I will always work out a best case scenario, medium case scenario, and a worst case scenario.
That's a good idea.
And if I'm happy with the worst case scenario and I'm content, then yeah, I just hit the button. I'm not one of these that says, oh, well, let me see what else is out there. Mm. No, I act. And to this day, it served me well. So that's how I'll continue to purchase. Look, that sounds very simple, I know.
There's a lot more involved
in it. I'm viewing a lot of properties or viewing a lot of deals. I'm maybe viewing lots of different sort of land opportunities. I'm running numbers. So yeah, it's not just, I've seen that. That works brilliant. But as I said, if it fits my strategy and it's ticking 90% of the boxes and the best, medium and worst case scenario suits me, yeah, I just go ahead.
Yeah, great. In terms of another one, what advice do you have for people looking to get started in the property field?
So I think for like a simple starting point, not knowing too much about their background, I would say pick an area. So research some areas. Once you've got that area, start to do some research on that area specifically. Like, you may highlight an area because the capital growth's doing well, or maybe rents are doing well. You may even know the area maybe, and you've picked that. So start doing some research, look at the rough prices, look at the rough yields. So you can do that by looking on Rightmove. Just look at the average price of a property that's in your budget. Look at the average rental for the same property, and you can work out average yields.
All this stuff's online, right?
Yeah, exactly. You can do a lot online, but yeah, do your research. Narrow down your strategy is key, because a lot of people come in and they want to invest in property, say, well, what do you want to do in property? What's your current end game? What's your current strategy? Oh, I don't know.
It's just generic.
Want to get a property that's going to bring me in money. Okay. Very, very vague, very, broad. You want to narrow down a strategy, whether that's high yielding, capital growth. I want aggressive capital growth. Mm. I want something solid where I'm just going to park my money and over time it's going to do well for me. Very low risk. Narrow down your strategy. And once you've got a strategy, like I said, you go to the area that you've figured out. You go do lots of viewings. You meet the agents. You get a feel for the area. And once you have that tick box aligned to about 90% and that property fits it, just go for it. And the last thing I'd say is ask for advice along the way to as many people as possible. Ask the agents, ask letting agents, try and use people in the industry's connections, contractors, solicitors, anything you can do where if you're new to it and you can utilize leveraging other people's experience, just do that. Do not be afraid to ask.
Even us, as we said, like, I think you mentioned it the other day, like, you never stop learning.
Yeah.
In terms of even us, we're finding things out. You're like, oh my God, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah.
But also, I'd like to also add to that point, two ways that we both got into it: get a job within property. Could be another route, could be another opportunity to get your foot in the door. Definitely. And learn on the job.
Yeah, definitely. If you haven't got a job, or you're looking to switch careers and you want to get into property investing, then yeah, it's a no-brainer. Get paid to learn. You're learning on the job and getting paid to do so. Definitely. So that is a very good thing. The last thing I'd actually add in is do not get cooped up by analysis paralysis. A lot of people overthink. Like I said, maybe if they think there's something better that may be around the corner, maybe they'll overanalyze numbers and just will keep going and keep going and keep just going.
Wait, and analysis
paralysis, you've got to get that out of your head. You have to just hit the button and commit.
Brilliant. And in terms of obviously going back, I guess, to your estate agency, you mentioned obviously you do it within your job as well already, but can you share some tips for negotiating on property deals or in general? Kind of negotiation skills would be helpful.
Yeah. So when you're negotiating, I think firstly, how you come across is massive.
Yeah.
If you come across like a polite way of putting it. If you come across like an idiot or arrogant, in that sort of manner, then you're already fighting a potentially losing battle, because it gets the other agents back up. Whoever you're negotiating with, you need them to be on your side. So firstly, you need to understand what their scenario is. What's the scenario of their vendor? What's their needs? What's their wants? Once you know what they need and what they want, then you can tailor your offer to suit that. So it may be, Mr. Agent, what's your vendor looking for? I'm interested in this property. I'm looking to run some numbers, putting an offer together. What's the ideal scenario for your vendor? Well, look, our vendor needs the money quick. He wants to move abroad, or they're looking to invest in something else. They've got other business scenarios they need to put money into, so they need quick funds. Okay, that's fine. Well, look, I can move quickly. Maybe a cash buyer. I've got my mortgage in principle. My broker can move very quickly. I can move probably within 6 weeks. Solicitors are mortgage dependent. And I'll offer X on that basis. It's going to be slightly low because we've got to move very fast. But yeah, I can offer that. And then they might be like, okay, we'll put it to the vendor. The vendor goes, well, if he can move that fast, then yeah, that's fine. I'll go for that. It may be that, look, this vendor is happy to sit and wait for the best offer. They are not fussed about getting a quick sale. The property's got no mortgage. This is their pension pot. They just want the best offer. So then you can negotiate accordingly. You can figure out what your highest offer would be that fits in your numbers, come in slightly lower and then work upwards. But you always need to do it in a way where you're trying to come across as in you're solving a solution for the vendor and the agent. It makes the agent's life a lot better. And obviously then when that's being relayed to the vendor, the seller, they're going to hear the sort of offer that tailors what they're looking for. And that will increase your chances of negotiating in a better way and getting to the ideal scenario for you. And you have to remember, it's a case of both parties need to be happy. If either one is ever not happy, whether that's you or them, it's got a high chance of falling out of bed. And then I would just say, when you're presenting your offers, present them nicely. As I said, don't be an idiot. I think that's it. I think I did have something else, but I think that's it in terms of negotiating. Yeah, I think
you've gone over quite a bit there and some really good tips, I think, in there to be able to utilise, whether you're doing it on your own behalf or...
The other thing I would say, sorry, is always put an explanation for why you're making an offer. Oh, yeah. So if you're making an offer lower, for example, say why. If you don't put any reasoning behind it, again,
pointless.
It's pointless. If you say I'm offering X because of this reason, then again, it comes back with some reasoning to the vendor and they'll be more open to listening. So if it needs a lot of work, I've viewed the property, it needs $5,000 spent on it, which I'm going to have to spend. Therefore, I need to offer $5,000 less than you would like. And the vendor goes, okay, yeah, that does need doing. Understandable. Yeah, I'm open to looking at that.
Wicked. Definitely some good points in there. To go on to the next one, Tobe. So what is the most rewarding part of your work?
Helping and working with people in property. I think that's the most rewarding. From my point of view, that's the most rewarding. And then the second most rewarding part is seeing a successful deal. For me personally, if I'm doing my own deals or seeing the project come to an end and it be successful, that is very rewarding. And I get that on both sides, obviously helping clients, investors, and seeing that is part of that. But also for myself, that's a very rewarding, enjoyable part.
In regards to this one, how do you balance the risks involved in property investment?
Risk mitigation...
Obviously, it depends on the strategy.
Depends on the strategy, of course. But like I said, looking at all different scenarios.
I think you mentioned it already, the best, worst, and mid case scenario.
Looking at that and doing good due diligence. That's the best way. You don't want to go in blind. You need to ask a lot of questions and do a lot of due diligence. That will help mitigate the risk, and knowing your boundaries and your scenario, your budget. And lastly, not overexposing yourself. So if you've got X amount of capital, I wouldn't recommend using it all in one go. Yeah. Try and keep a little buffer there just in case something does go wrong.
Definitely. I think, as you mentioned there, it depends on obviously the person in particular. And of course, any investment to an extent is seen as a risk.
Yeah.
But it's to what level of risk you want to dive into, which, definitely can help make a decision for certain people. Mm-hmm. Just into the last two now. So I would say for the next one, I think this is going to be a good one for listeners to really know about. Do you have any favorite resources, books, podcasts, or websites that kind of you use personally or as a company that also we use for data that's obviously helped you within your property journey?
Yes, I'll try and keep it brief because there's quite a lot. So JLL, very good for property market reports and forecasts. Savills as well, big players in the industry, very good for looking at their property forecasts. So that's that. Home Track Reports. So they're created by Zoopla, one of the biggest property portals in the UK, and they create a monthly house price index report, and they also do a quarterly rental report. So looking at those reports, look at the data, and they give you their thoughts behind the data as well, which is quite helpful. Then you've got Land Registry. So Land Registry also, that's what property transactions actually go through, their completed transactions, hard facts and data. They create their own reports. So for looking at that, then I would say property podcasts.
The Pure Property Podcast.
You've got our podcast, of course. There's another podcast which I do recommend, and I know a few of our listeners, I believe, actually listen to as well. And that is the Property Hubs podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Good bit of information on them ones.
Yeah, so sure. The Property Hub podcast is good. There's another one called The Property Jam. We've actually had one of their podcasters on our podcast as well. The Property Jam is good, very informative, and they're people investing as well. So that's good. But they're probably the main ones. Books and resources.
It's loads, isn't there?
Yeah, there's lots out there, in all fairness.
Brilliant. And then just going on to the last one to keep it short and sweet, where can our listeners find you and also learn more about kind of what you're working on, kind of what you're doing, posting? Because obviously we do know you're quite active on the socials, and it's good, obviously good information. So where can they find yourself?
So predominantly the best place to go is Instagram. Mm-hmm. So it's Toby with an I, T-O-B-I _property. And you'll find me on Instagram. I post quite a bit of content there, and I'm trying to keep that as frequent as possible. LinkedIn, just search my name, Toby Mancuso. You've been active on LinkedIn
as well, so yeah. Definitely.
Fred's, I'm on there. I do a little bit on Twitter, but that's more comical rather than educational. But yeah, Instagram and LinkedIn is probably the best places that you can find me and follow what I'm doing. I try and share as much as possible, and I'll continue to do so along the way.
As well as obviously the podcast.
As well as the podcast, yeah, find me on here. This is a very good platform, which I enjoy doing.
Definitely. Well, no, as a whole, Toby, I think it's been a great kind of mini insight. We've kept it short and sweet, just so obviously the listeners on the go can listen in and get to know yourself a little bit more. So I hope that's helped everyone listening in today. And appreciate it. Anything last that you want to kind of highlight or mention?
I'm surprised I kept that quite brief, to be fair. I probably could have waffled on quite a lot more.
Pretty impressive. But no, obviously, as always, let us know, guys, if you have any questions. And as a whole, we'll catch you next time.
Yeah, see you next time. Bye-bye.